back to Hype Podcast. This is Hypeable.com's flagship show where we bring you all the latest news and analysis on the latest entertainment and pop culture stories every week. My name is Pamela and I'll be hosting today. We're so happy you guys joined us for episode 111. We've got a lot of things to talk about today and we've got a semi-full panel. My name is Pamela and I'll be hosting and I have Selena and Kristen with me again this week. You ladies doing okay?
Yeah. We're tired, but okay.
Yeah. I'm holding down the fort.
Yeah, you are. Me and Kristen are like on either side of the late and earliness.
So. Yeah, Selena just got up and I'm waiting to go to bed.
Yes.
Well, we're going to try and keep it interesting for you guys. I just had some dark chocolate, so I feel like that's going to keep me going.
That's a good idea. We should all do that next time.
Yeah, we should. It should just be chocolate hype. Yeah.
Yes.
So we're gonna try and get the ball rolling and warm up with our How We Hype segment, as always. And I want to start with Selena, because this has been out for a while in the US and I've been like waiting for you to see this movie. So take it away.
Yeah. Oh my God, guys. I finally saw Ghostbusters. Yay! It's finally out in Denmark and I finally had some time to go and see it. And I think usually when we have to wait this long for movies to come out, I get over the need or the desire to see it because it's like leading up to the premiere. I'm like, oh my God, the movie's coming soon. So exciting. And then it's out everywhere else. And I read reviews and I see reactions and I see people sort of get over it. And I get over it, but not for Ghostbusters because like I needed to see this movie and vote with my money or whatever the hell they say, even though that probably doesn't count over here, but whatever. So I loved it. I thought it was like genuinely thought it was a good movie. And I was like prepared to be like, oh, I loved it, even though I maybe didn't. But no, I think it was good. I think there were slow parts and there were parts that I thought were like humor that wasn't necessarily directed at me. Like when they were in the lab and they started doing the fart jokes, I was like, oh no, it's that kind of movie. Like that's the level of humor we're going for. But no, it got so good. And I think like all of the many shots of them pulling their things out, like the guns and shooting the ghosts, were all amazing. What's her name? Holtzman was
yes.
Obviously the best. I also loved Leslie Jones.
Yes, and I love Patty.
I mean, Patty was fantastic. I really like the sort of central like friendship between the leading female characters and obviously Chris Hemsworth. Like my little brother is like obsessed with Chris Hemsworth. So that bit of him dancing at the end was like he was in heaven. It was like he wanted to get into the screen. Like it was so funny. And I mean, I think it was like, there's been so much talk after Ghostbusters about how it hasn't made as much money as they wanted it to. And it's just one of many of summer 2016's movies that just haven't done amazingly well. But I think like just them having made this movie is kind of a triumph and just them getting away with women doing comedy in this way at all, because it is so not female comedy, you know? I know Bridesmaids wasn't either, and a lot of Faig's films aren't, like, kind of do subvert the tropes, like Spy, which is also fantastic, but this was just, here we are, and we're hilarious, and we're gonna fight ghosts, and the fact that they were women, like, never mattered, and I thought it was just, it was like, very moving in a weird way, so I just thought it was really good. I was so impressed. I love the fight scenes. I want to be a Ghostbuster.
I mean, yeah. Who doesn't want to be a Ghostbuster?
I never wanted to before, but I do now.
Yay!
So, Kristen, kind of sticking with the sci-fi supernatural vibe. Why don't you tell us about your book hype?
Well, for the last episode of Book Hype that we did last Sunday, we all picked up a Michael Crichton book. Because none of us had read him, and he's got his final new novel, or at least we think it's the final one since he passed away a few years ago. But his widow found his completed manuscript hidden away, and it's about a couple of archaeologists back in, like, the, you know, I guess they called it the Bone Wars period. And we talked a lot about his books and all of that, but we each had to pick one up. And so I've been reading Michael Crichton for the first time, and it's so far out of my typical genre that I wasn't sure I was going to like it. The book I'm reading is actually called Micro, and it was the first one, I believe, that was published posthumously, like right after he passed. And it's really good so far. Like, I'm not all the way through it yet. I got about halfway before we had to podcast, but it's really interesting, and it's kind of got a Jurassic Parkian vibe without being about dinosaurs. Like, it's you know, long story short, it's about, like, this group of scientists who are basically kind of wrapped up in the wrong situation at the wrong time, kind of thing. And instead of, like, it being dinosaurs that they're being attacked by, it's like bugs because they're small, and it's insane. But it's really, really fun, and it was nice to kind of step out of my typical reading, you know, safe place and try something new. So if you haven't read Michael Crichton, it might be time. Give it a shot. But it was really good fun. So it was kind of nice to, you know, take a walk on the wild side and read a different genre for once.
That's really cool. I've never read any of his books, but obviously, like, I've seen so many of the stories that have been adapted for the small and the big screen. So it is, I think I might have to put this on my ever-expanding list of to-read items. But that's really cool that you liked it, because I know that you always are, like, into the new adult. I always go to you for my new adult.
Yeah. Things,
but it's cool to hear you talking about some other stuff. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I want to very quickly talk about Frank Ocean, who basically took me to church, you guys, with his new album, Blonde. It's so amazing. I understand that, like, music is never going to be for everybody, but I am kind of saying that if you can't find, like, one thing in here that makes you feel something, like, you might be a robot. I just think he's such a brilliant storyteller, and every note, every word in this album is just so perfectly placed. It's like a complete work of art. I'm so blown away by how solid it is, how cohesive it is. He's always been able to invoke emotion, and this is just like, oh my gosh, it's Frank Ocean at his best. I just can't even. I was thinking about, like, what I wanted to recommend, because it's one of those albums that I can really just, like, play from start to finish. I don't even need to shuffle it. I could just, like, let it run through. So my favorites change all the time, but I will say that if you're looking for, like, some standout tracks right now, my favorites are Ivy, Solo, and Self Control. I think Ivy is, like, it's very Frank Ocean-esque, so if you've never, like, listened to anything else that he's done before, Ivy might be a good intro, like, into his music. It might make you enticed to listen to some of his other stuff. And also, I would highly recommend watching the music video for his song Nikes, which is the first track off of Blonde, because it's just so well done, and the lyrics are amazing and poignant and relevant, and just, yeah, I just can't speak, like, any more highly about this album than I already am. But yeah, I think that it's like, anytime you're waiting for somebody to release something, like, it's been 4 years since his last album came out, you always run the risk of thinking, like, what if this doesn't live up to the hype? I really think it lives up to the hype. I've talked to a lot of people that had also been waiting 4 years for some new music, and they are very pleased with it too. So definitely worth a listen, and yeah, that's all I have to say about that. Okay, so now that I have waxed poetic about Frank Ocean, we can move on to the news. We have a lot of stuff to get through. There's some fun stuff in here, so I'll have Selena take it away.
Our first story in the lineup is very exciting because it relates to one of our favorite movies that comes out in 2019, which is, of course, Captain Marvel, the first Marvel superhero movie starring Brie Larson. Funny side note, by the way, every time I say in a Marvel article on Hypable that this is Marvel's first and only female superhero movie, someone gets pissed at me because apparently we're not allowed to mention Marvel shortcomings in this department. I just think it's so funny. Like, I am stating a fact, and these people, anyway, it's not important. I just think it's funny. So the news we're talking about today is that Captain Marvel may have narrowed in on a director, and they're all women, just like Wonder Woman will be helmed, or is being helmed by a woman, Patty Jenkins. These three alleged contenders on the shortlist, that it's the Hollywood Reporter that's figured this out. We don't have like official word, but you rarely do in this situation, but we'll know when they pick someone if this list was actually legit. So the top three choices are Nikki Caro, Leslie Linka-Glatter, and Laureen Scafaria. Like, these may not be names you've heard before, other than Nikki Caro, who is, of course, director of Whale Rider, which is very cool because that's pretty much one of the, like, most recognized sort of feminist movies in the last 15 years, because it came out in 2002. And she's also directed North Country, McFarland, USA, and she'll be directing the upcoming Zookeeper's Wife. So she's one option. The other one, Leslie Linka-Glatter, is a TV director. And the first thing I noted, of course, because that's where my brain is right now, she directed a bunch of episodes of Gilmore Girls. So mm-hmm. I posted it on Twitter, at Gilmore Girls, director is in contention. She's also directed Twin Peaks, Freaks and Geeks, The West Wing, Mad Men, True Blood, and she's doing Homeland episodes at the moment. She's basically been all around the genres, and even though she's... like, Marvel does bring in a lot of TV directors, so this wouldn't be a first by any stretch. And the final option is Laureen Scafaria, who is actually a director, writer, and actress. And she sort of debuted with her first movie that she wrote and directed with Seeking a Friend for the End of the World with Keira Knightley and... What's his name?
Steve Carell.
Steve Carell. I was like, Steve Scott? No, that's wrong. an adorable movie that actually was surprisingly good, I thought. She's also directed some TV, New Girl, for example, and in 2015 she both wrote and directed The Meddler, which you may or may not have seen. It's the movie that starred Rose Byrne and Susan Sarandon as like the mom that comes back to meddle in her daughter's life. So those are our three options. Any sort of immediate thoughts, any preferences, any names you've heard before?
I've definitely heard of Leslie Linka-Glatter, like... she's surrounded a lot of shows that I've watched quite fanatically, West Wing, Gilmore Girls amongst them. So her name's really familiar to me, and I'd love to see her kind of take the leap from TV to film. Like, she's done a lot of TV, so you know that she's, you know, familiar with a set, maybe more a TV set than a movie set, but it can't be that different. I'd love to see her get her hands on something like this and see what she can do with it and, you know, maybe go from there. But she's probably the most familiar name for me.
And same for me, although I do want to point out that I have seen McFarland USA, which is what Nikki Caro directed. And that is like such a lovely movie. I'm such a big fan of like sports movies. So if you like a good sports drama and you haven't seen that, like, it's probably going to make you cry. It is completely different, however, to... you know, what Captain Marvel will undoubtedly bring to the table. But I kind of like that none of these directors have really delved into the superhero spectrum before, because I feel like coming into it with a fresh pair of eyes, like, is sometimes a good thing. You don't want it to look like somebody else's work, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. I like that they come from, like, all different walks of life.
I agree. I think that Marvel does this a lot, actually. And interestingly, and I know that I am not in the majority on this, but I think when directors return for round two, I don't think it's as good in both cases. So I'm very, very into this. We had one comment, which is from Bob Klaus, who said, please let it be Laureen Scafaria. She's phenomenal, which I think is interesting because she's actually the one who's done the least work. But I guess, you know, the few things she's done have been... phenomenal, which I agree with. I think Nikki Caro would be a really interesting choice. I mean, I'm obviously it's hard to tell what either of these women would do with this property, which is a very specific thing, but I think she's sort of, she has the most cinematic experience, which is like, it's not like super key, but it's probably a bonus. And I think, you know, I have this theory that Marvel brings in TV directors because they're more easy to control, because TV directors are used to coming into projects and going by a showrunner's vision. They're not necessarily used to taking on the directorial responsibilities that you have on a movie where the director is the showrunner. And so I think that to sort of wrangle control from Marvel, which is known for being very, very set in its ways when it comes to these characters in these movies, I think someone like Nikki Caro probably has the best chance of influencing the movie, exactly like you said, to not maybe look as much like the others and maybe not fit into the mold as much. Although, on the other hand, in a movie like Captain Marvel, which unfortunately might actually struggle in 2019 by being a female-led superhero movie, believe it or not, I cannot believe I'm saying this sentence, having a movie that looks more like the other Marvel movies might not be a bad thing. So there's pluses and minuses to every side.
Well, and Captain Marvel, while we've read and heard a lot about her recently, she's not the most well-known superhero. It's not like Wonder Woman that everyone knows. So I feel like they don't have as big of shoes to fill. Like, whoever directs this movie, whichever woman directs this movie, can kind of mold it however she sees fit. Like, it's not like Superman or Batman that everyone knows that story and they all have expectations. Like, I think this is going to be a little bit easier to kind of tell the story. You won't have a million people thinking that they know how you should do it and that it should have been done this way or that way. Like, this is a character that they have a little more leeway with. So I'm hoping that, yeah, by getting somebody who doesn't have a ton of, a ton of films in their filmography already, like, you'll have a fresh voice with a fresh character, and hopefully it'll, you know, kind of breathe some life into the Marvel universe that has become, you know, kind of formulaic a little bit here and there and, you know, that sort of thing. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so speaking of Marvel, moving on, we heard from Vin Diesel this week. Yes, I know, we're all waiting on pins and needles for Vin Diesel to talk to us. During a Facebook Live chat where he was celebrating having 100 million followers, he kind of let loose that the Guardians will be included in Avengers Infinity War, and he's really, really excited about it. That's basically all there is to know. We don't know how they're going to be used or anything like that. But it's good to know that they will be there. They're pretty beloved. I mean, I think we all, Guardians did very well when it came out, and we're all, you know, waiting anxiously for next May to roll around so we can see Volume 2. But Avengers Infinity War is then going to be released the following May in 2018. So they, you know, they've got enough time to really use them if they want. As far as we know, Infinity War is going to be chock full of craziness because they're supposed to be rumored to be about 60 plus characters in there. So if you thought Civil War was insane, Infinity War is going to be even worse. But we don't know much about them yet. We're still kind of waiting to learn more and more. So just stay tuned and I'm sure we'll hear about who else is going to be there. Slash maybe it'll be more interesting to learn who isn't going to be there.
I know. It'll be really funny at this point if Captain Marvel is not in this film.
Really? I mean, yeah, that's basically, like, if it'll be more notable who is left out of Infinity War.
Well, she's going to be in it, so it's not really relevant. But you're right, actually. I wonder if anyone will be left out. I mean, other than the disposable love interests, Natalie Portman and Gwyneth Paltrow, who've both been, like, quietly dumped, but... Other than those.
I mean, yeah, basically.
Like, the characters that really matter, you know, the men. I'm sorry, I'm done.
And Black Widow.
Yes, yes, that one.
I'm just sure we can one.
Come up with
just,
at least
just
five.
Just the one? Yeah. No. But yeah, so it... Yeah. It's interesting. Something to keep in mind. Yeah. I'm just glad that,
it's exciting.
You know, add Zoe Saldana. She's mm-hmm. amazing. And so is her character, whose name is evading me at the moment. But yeah, so it's good fun.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to see the universes sort of collide. And it's also interesting to see with Thor Ragnarok coming up, whether they're, because they're going to do some Planet Hulk storylines, if, and we know that they're probably going to be crossing over a little bit with Doctor Strange. So it's interesting if we're actually going to start seeing some more Avengers and space type stuff, or if it's literally just going to be Guardians of the Galaxy coming to Earth, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, you guys, get ready for another live adaptation that's set to hit the big screen, maybe. Disney has just announced that director Sam Mendes, who many of us will know from the last two James Bond movies, is in early talks to direct a live version of James and the Giant Peach. Of course, Disney did make the original adaptation for this movie back in 1996, and that was a wonderful blend of real actors and then stop-motion animation. So this is kind of just early on in the works. I'm going to be interested to see how this goes, because this is one of my favorite Roald Dahl books. The movie is one of those movies that, like, my family and I always watched as a kid. I know Karen, who has been on the show before and also wrote this article up, is a little traumatized by this movie. So I can't speak for everyone, clearly. But I'll be interested to see what comes of this, because I love Roald Dahl stories. And I think that this is one of the best ones, in my opinion. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on this, but I was excited to see this headline.
I was going to say, I do love Roald Dahl. I was a huge BFG fan, so I was very excited to see that come to screens this summer. I never read James and the Giant Peach, and I've never actually seen this movie. I know the visual of it, like, it sticks out in my brain just from commercials and stuff, but I never saw it, and Karen hates it. Like, is terrified of it. She had a bad experience with it as a kid and is now just like, no. So it'll be interesting when this comes out.
That's so funny. I mean, I feel that, because that's how I feel about E.T. I feel like I don't love E.T. very much because I was traumatized by it. So I can understand that. But
yeah, we all have one of those, I'm sure.
Going back to DC, or, well, what kind of... going from Marvel to DC, I guess I put this the wrong place of the dock. I am sorry, guys. A very interesting shakeup has happened in the superhero world, as Doug Liman has basically left Marvel for DC, which is interesting. But he's also left Channing Tatum's much troubled Gambit for DC's Justice League Dark. Both of these movies have kind of been shuffled around between directors to an amount that we should probably start being concerned about. Guillermo del Toro was originally set to helm Justice League Dark and has helped sort of develop it and stuff, but he left the project as director a while back, and he's still going to be producing, but apparently a new director is taking it on. The director's chair has actually been empty since 2015, and now Doug Liman has chosen to take on the project. He's known for movies like The Bourne Identity and Edge of Tomorrow. So Justice League Dark, not to be confused with Justice League, which is like a collection of offbeat sort of darker superheroes. So basically Suicide Squad 2.0 is an interesting and a good match for him. But what, of course, is an issue is that this essentially means that he has left Gambit hanging, which is not the first time that has happened. And Channing Tatum, it's been a passion project for him for a while. Gambit is basically to Channing Tatum what Deadpool is to Ryan Reynolds, only this movie, unfortunately, seems to be going the way of Daredevil for Ben Affleck. And it's a shame to see, because we like Channing Tatum and we like Marvel and we like sort of seeing these movies come together, but things are not looking good for it. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts.
Gambit is my favorite X-Men, and he has not been, yeah, aww, I know, and he really hasn't been in any of the movies. Like, he was in, the character was in the one, I forget who exactly, I think it was Taylor Kitsch who played him. He was okay, but I was really looking forward to this, and so, yeah, I'm I'm still holding out hope that some enthusiastic young director will say, I want to do this, and Channing will be like, yeah, let's do it, and it will end up, it will turn out fabulous, but it has been in development hell for a long time, so it's just a cross your fingers and see if it ends up happening kind of situation, basically.
Am I right to call it a Marvel film? Should we call it a Sony film?
X-Men is Marvel, and I don't think you're wrong to call it that. I'm pretty sure they put the Marvel tag in front of all the X-Men films, so I think you're okay. It's one of those gray areas because the X-Men were owned by Sony for so long, and they're just sort of starting to kind of play nice, so who knows? All right. Well, moving from some superheroes to musicals, because that, it's a thing we do. We got another trailer for La La Land that we've talked about before, which is the musical that has been, teased for the last couple of months, starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. The difference with this trailer from the ones we've seen before is that it's Emma Stone singing. We got to hear a little bit of Ryan Gosling's voice in the last one, and this one basically stars Emma Stone. We get a lot more of the same visuals that we've gotten before, quite a bit at, Griffith Observatory, which I have now been to, so that was kind of cool. Yeah, we went while we were in LA, so it was kind of neat to, see a little bit of the same view that I've seen before now. So it's not really an outstanding trailer, because while you get to hear her, which is nice, it's still hard to put your finger on exactly what this film is about and the tone of it and all of that. So we'll hopefully get another trailer coming up, but I'm pretty sure this movie is supposed to come out by the end of this year, sometime around Christmas. So I'm sure we'll get another trailer in another month or so and get another look at it.
Cool. I'm excited.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, neither one of them are vocalists first. They're both actors first. And I kind of like that for a Hollywood musical.
I do too.
If you're going to be a vocalist, then go to Broadway. If you're going to do a Hollywood musical, it's okay if your voice isn't the, strongest and brightest part. I'm on board for this very, very much, and I think it's going to be great.
Although I think we should mention that Emma Stone did do Cabaret for a while, which is a big, musical. I think that she definitely, I'm wondering if we'll see more of her, singing chops within the movie. This obviously just gives us a little taste. But I think that if she can pull off Cabaret, then she'll be just fine in this. I think she's more of a singer than Gosling. But then again, he did do the Mickey Mouse Club, so, going back to
You never know. No, this was really melodic and just kind of, it's very Norah Jonesy, this song that she was singing, so it's not, the most powerhouse vocals, showcasing her. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll see and hear more in the coming months.
Well, somebody else we might be seeing a little bit more of is Rupert Grint, everybody's favorite Harry Potter ginger. Hopefully. It looks like he might actually have a TV show that's getting picked up off the ground.
Yeah, right, Pam. Do you have any idea how many times we've reported that Rupert Grint
has
a TV show?
Yes, that's why I'm trying to stay hopeful, okay? There was that weird superhero one. And then Super Clyde, yeah. And then there was the other one, and now there's this.
There's been a third. I'm pretty sure this is number four.
Okay, well, I have a little hope for this, because this is not actually coming to TV. This is coming to Sony's new streaming service, Crackle. And Rupert Grint is set to star in the television series Snatch, which is an adaptation of Guy Ritchie's 2000s film of the same name. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with the original film, it starred Jason Statham, Brad Pitt, Benicio del Toro, and it's a heist movie. And basically, this is not necessarily...
Oh my god, don't you just hate when they redo heist movies? Yes. Can they just think of original ideas?
Hashtag Ocean's 8. Or whatever it's called. Anyway, you won't find a retelling here. It's just kind of a story that exists within the same world. It is inspired by a real-life heist that happened in London, and basically this group of 20-somethings stumble upon a truck of stolen gold bullion and are then suddenly thrust into this world of organized crime. Rupert Grint is going to play a posh con man in this named Charlie Cavendish. And he's also joined by Gossip Girl alum Ed Westwick, who's going to be appearing periodically throughout the 10-episode first season run of this series. He's going to be playing a character named Sunny Castillo, who is a nightclub owner. So that's kind of cool. And I really, really hope this works out because, like Selena says, we've been burned too many times. And I would watch this. So there.
I would watch anything with Rupert Grint in it. I love him so much. But it's also just hilarious because, like, oh my god. Like, on one hand, I don't understand why he hasn't had, like, a million projects by now. And on the other hand, clearly, maybe there is a reason for it. So I will be very excited to see if this time his project actually makes it to air. And I will just say I'm very proud of him for chugging along and continuing to try, because I think after my like third attempt failed, I would be like so sad and just go home and be like, Hollywood doesn't want me. But clearly it's just about finding, because it's always about when you put these shows together, like finding the right timing for it. And there's a million reasons that they get denied and don't make it to air. And it's just unfortunate that he hasn't run into anything yet that's been a good fit. So let's hope this one is, even though it's like straight to streaming. But hey, that's all the rage, even though I have no idea what Crackle is. I've never heard of it before.
I think it's brand new. It's Sony's new streaming service. Okay. So I don't think anybody's really heard of it. But okay. Yeah, at least we'll see it.
I have it downloaded on my Roku. I've never actually watched anything on Crackle, but I do have it. I've had it for probably about a year or so. I'll definitely keep an eye out for this. I don't know when it's coming, but I think
you're prepared.
Yeah, I'm just ready to go.
You'll be checking it every day.
Snatch has quite a cult following. Like, it's a pretty beloved film in certain circles. So this might have a better shot than some of his other projects, because they didn't really have a tie-in to, like, bring in a fan base, you know? So hopefully this one will fare better than his previous attempts.
Right. And, I mean, it doesn't star women. I mean, that's the thing. If this had been, like, a female reboot, that would have been the focus, and people... It's like the Jack Ryan series that John Krasinski is doing. Like, he's like the third Jack Ryan, but people are just like, oh, cool, I loved John Krasinski. They aren't like, it's time to end the female reboot is dead, blah, 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 blah. So it is like, unfortunately, like, that's the reality. But yay, Rupert, and yay, this new thing. I've never seen Snatch. So I will be looking forward to it. So speaking of our unproblematic faves that are starring in TV series as con artists. See how far I can stretch this. Who have acted in big franchise movies that have an overlapping fan base. I'm talking about John Cho, who is gonna be starring in USA Network's Connoisseur. It doesn't matter. As a brilliant con artist. So he is both producing and starring in Connoisseur. He'll play Clay Park, who is described as a brilliant con artist who dupes the wealthiest, most powerful people in the country by playing millions for fake wine, but his hustle forces him into a deadly bargain with an organized crime syndicate, puts him in the crosshairs of the FBI, and unearths the details of a tragedy that fractured his family years ago in Korea. Okay, that description is like bone dry. Like, this does not sound like a show that I am in any way interested in. But I love John Cho, so I will be checking this out literally just for him.
When I heard the title of this project, I knew it was on USA. Like, it screams USA. Like, it, you know, between Suits and some of the others that are all... It screams USA. This is very much on brand for them. I haven't watched a lot of the USA projects, but I love John Cho. So, you know, maybe this will be the one. I did watch Monk back in the day, but... You know, so yeah, I'm interested to see what it is. I'll check it out, but I don't know if it will be a regular view for me.
In my head, Selfie on ABC is heading into its third season right now. John Cho and Karen Gillan are still going strong. And oh my god, you guys, I love that. I miss that show so much, even after all this time. It's my, you know, forever show. But see, yeah, you know,
that season you loved Selfie and I loved Manhattan Love Story, and both were true. Like they dumped were, like, right away.
Both, yeah, and they were both like taking the audience away from each other, I guess, because they were like very similar and on the same network, and people just were not into them.
Yeah,
or I guess sad. Like. That's the wrong word, but, like, neither of them picked up. That was the year, oh, my God, that was the year of really bad TV, though, because it was also when Red Band Society was airing.
Yep. It was the worst. That was a rough fall. That really yeah, was.
It was. Anyway.
In a little bit of maybe brighter news, I don't know, it depends on how you feel regarding sequels, Laika, the studio that brought us Kubo and the Two Strings, which just premiered last weekend, as well as films you may have heard of, Coraline, Paranorman, and The Box Trolls, they're, I believe it's the head of the studio, I cannot find his name, he went basically on the record saying, "I take a firm stand against sequels. My industry brethren are a little shocked at how firmly I'm committed to not doing sequels." They are just dead set that they don't need franchises. And it's an interesting stance, because where they left Kubo, like, there's a lot that they could do with it, and I'm kind of surprised. He also went on to admit that there are good sequels, but if you look at where our industry is going, it's dominated by franchises and brands, redos, remakes, sequels, and prequels, where all these old presents are rewrapped and offered up as new gifts. And he would rather just basically create new presents for us all to open once a year. So, yeah, their goal is to put out one film a year, which is, you know, kind of in the same vein as Pixar. I mean, for a long time, we're getting one Pixar film a year every 2 years. It takes a while with, you know, stop motion and animation, like, it takes a little longer. So, I loved Kubo. I got a chance to review it. It's a really fun movie, but, you know, it's kind of disappointing that you fall in love with these characters, and just knowing off the bat that there's no chance at ever getting more it's a little disappointing, but I can also see his point of view, and there are a lot of sequels.
It's refreshing. I think so. I mean, and it's sort of tough to say because I haven't seen Kubo, so if I had, I might be like, oh, but it needs a sequel so bad. But I think we are sort of losing, at the moment, I'm sure it's going to come back, but we're sort of losing the ability to just enjoy a one time, like, immersive experience that doesn't need to be repeated, and that doesn't need to be continued, and that doesn't need to sort of be revisited again and again. Like, our franchise culture is very much built on the fact that the people in entertainment right now are the nerds who had Star Wars action figures in their basements, and that read the continuation movies, and that watched all the Ghostbusters, and that did all the things, and that's fantastic. I am loving it, but I also do think that it's sort of, we have a need to repeat and continue everything and reboot everything, etc., etc. So I think people saying, no, you know what, my movie is a one-off thing, it's the beginning, middle, and end, and that's it, I think that's great. Not for everything, but certainly for some things. So there.
and I definitely think it kind of helps them stand out as a studio if it's, mm-hmm. you know, if a thing they're going to, you know, put their foot down about. It will definitely keep their name out there. Just they're the studio that doesn't do sequels. And, mm-hmm. you know, any publicity is good publicity. So,
yeah.
Like, and they've made some. Yeah.
I would argue that Pixar's originals are usually, apart from Toy Story 2, like, stronger than their sequels. So it's sort of, you know, it's a good model to base themselves after. And I will say, after my, like, little righteous spiel, I just remembered that the people who did The Last of Us game said at one point that they weren't going to do a second game in that series. And I was like, no! Because I was like, the world is so interesting. There's so much to explore. Basically, everything you just said. So I'm basically a hypocrite, but...
I mean, we all have properties where we just wish there was more. Like,
yeah.
I mean, we all wanted more Harry Potter. And now we're not sure we want it anymore. And, you know, like, it's one of those things. Like, you fall in love with a world or a story and you just want a little bit more. And, you know, it just, it's one of those things. But I like that they have made a stand, and hopefully they stick to it.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have got a little bit more movie news for you guys. author Hanya Yanagihara's A Little Life has officially been picked up for a limited TV series by producers Scott Rudin and director Joe Mantello. And I wanted to bring this up because I don't know if you guys have heard about this book, but I actually just started reading it recently. I'm about 100 pages in, and it was recommended to me by our friend Mike, who, of course, listens to the show. He's friend of ours, and I'm really enjoying it. It's just one of the most beautifully written books I've ever read, so I'm really interested to see where this goes. The synopsis basically, or the book centers around this group of friends, and it kind of follows them throughout their lives, and one's an artist and one's an actor, and it just kind of shows kind of the struggles and the ups and downs and things like that. I know that there's more to the book, but I kind of have tried to stay away from like bigger synopsis other than what's like on the back cover, because I kind of feel like something like this, when it's like purposefully ambiguous on the back, you should kind of let the story unfold as you read it. But I definitely really recommend picking this up. I'm very interested to see where this goes. They're actually still kind of looking for a network or, you know, streaming service to pick it up. So it's very much like in the beginning stages of production. But yeah, some exciting news for this book, which has a huge following. I'm sure some of our listeners have heard about it. I don't know if you guys have, but definitely put it on your to-read really. List because I'm enjoying it so far.
Okay. Well, this one is something I'm surprised neither of you guys picked this story, because I would have assumed that you are sort of the key audience for this. Whereas I'm sitting here going, have I seen this, or am I confusing it with Pippi Longstocking? This is an adaptation that's coming to Netflix of Anne of Green Gables, which is going to be a brand new series with quote-unquote additional themes. Oh, now I remember. It's the one with the little school and the grandmother?
I just know that the guy calls her carrots, and that's it. That's all
yeah.
I remember.
Oh yeah, it's
about
the big
this.
Ship. That's right. So, the OTP of Anne of Green Gables. So this is, I mean, this has a lot of people excited, because Anne of Green Gables is kind of like a classic sort of girl, quote unquote girl power, I guess, early book, and it's been adapted before, but these adaptations are obviously like stuff that we watched as children, and it looks that way. So a Netflix adaptation series doesn't seem to be drawing any negativity. It's Breaking Bad writer and producer Moira Wally Beckett, who is writing the 8-episode series, and she'll also serve as showrunner. And in Canada, it'll air on CBC. Who knows what's going to happen with it in the UK. I know there was one series recently that was announced as being airing in the UK on Amazon Prime, and it made me really sad, because you can't get Amazon Prime in Denmark. So who knows how I'm going to... I don't remember what show it was, but who knows how I'm going to be able to watch that. But this one is going to be on Netflix, and Deadline synopsis goes, the coming-of-age series will focus on a young girl who, after an abusive childhood spent in orphanages in the homes of strangers, is mistakenly sent to live with an elderly spinster and her aging brother. Over time, and thanks to her unique spirit, fierce intellect, and brilliant imagination, 13-year-old Anne will transform their lives and eventually the small town in which they live. So there'll be new adventures reflecting themes of identity, sexism, bullying, prejudice, and trusting one's self. But the series will still be set in 1890. The book was published in 1890. The book was published in 1908. So, I mean, cool, first of all, that it's a period drama and that it's going to be staying true to the form and the settings and stuff. Interesting that they're incorporating new themes. I'm very excited to see how they update this. I'm excited. I think it's great. Even though I only have very vague memories of watching it.
I only have very vague recollections of this book. I know it was like, I feel like it's one of those books that most like children become obsessed with in elementary school. I was much more into like The Secret Garden and things like that. So I feel like Anne of Green Gables just kind of like didn't do it for me, but it's always been like, it is like you said, like kind of like a cornerstone of like American childhood. So I'm sure there are a lot of people that are really excited for this.
Yeah, I definitely never read these. I know of them, but I know nothing about the books, so.
No, I never read it. I watched the miniseries that was airing, okay, like, on loop. But I think I'm confusing it, because in Denmark, like, on the channels, there were so many children's series in the same style that were all adaptations of Astrid Lindgren novels. So Pippi Longstocking and lots of other ones, and they all look the same. And I always sort of thought of Anne of Green Gables as just another one of those. So it's hard to separate it in my mind, but it doesn't matter because it's still exciting. And we will see when it comes to Netflix in 2017 what they make of it.
Okay, our last story of the day is kind of music related. My dog always does this. He just wants to be heard. He wants to be on the show. Anyway, our last news story of the day is going back to musicals a little bit. NBC has released the first promo video for Hairspray Live, which is coming later this year. And it gives us a great first look at the whole entire cast all done up in their ensembles for the musical. I'm so excited for this. I think that NBC is like really kind of hit its stride in musicals after some failed attempts. And Hairspray is just so fun. I have such a soft spot for Hairspray. So I think this is going to be really great. So we get some awesome kind of first looks at Harvey Fernstein, who, of course, originated the role of Edna Turnblad on Broadway, is back to play Edna again in this version. Jennifer Hudson, who, of course, is Motormouth Maybelle. Ariana Grande, who was recently announced to have joined the cast, who's playing Penny Pingleton. And then, of course, you have Martin Short, Derek Hough, Kristen Chenoweth, Dove Cameron, who's big in the Disney Channel scene, Garrett Clayton, Sean Hayes, Andrea Martin. Basically, you get like a great first look at everybody, including Maddie. Oh my gosh, I can't remember her last name. Maddie Bialia, who is playing Tracy Turnblad. She got cast in the role after a huge open casting call, so that's kind of cool. This is her first big thing, and I just think this is going to be so much fun. I will definitely be tuning in December, so if you can't wait for that as well, you should definitely head over to Hypeable and check out this short little promo featuring everybody in the cast.
Cool. There's so much news we didn't get to today.
I was going to say this was kind of a funny week for news because there was some stuff, but there also wasn't too much. But
it was like medium stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Totally. But there are like a bunch of other news stories, of course, going up on the daily, on the hour, every minute over on Hypeable.com. Some of the stories we weren't able to get to this week include Fault in Our Stars director Josh Boone signing on to direct the X-Men spinoff New Mutants. Lifetime has announced a Britney Spears made-for-TV movie set to come out next year. Naya Rivera from Glee has a tell-all memoir coming out. And so if you want to read up more about that, you should head over to Hypeable as well. And there's also some news of maybe a new Harry Potter ride coming to Wizarding World of Harry Potter. So head on over to Hypeable and read up on these stories and much, much more for all of your fandom news fixes. I'm like losing it, you guys. It's kind of getting late here. Okay, yeah. Before I ramble on anymore, let's move on to TV show of the week. I think Kristen and I have been watching some stuff, so I'm going to let Kristen go for it.
I have had the honor of introducing Karen to The West Wing, and it has been so much fun so far. We are, I think, 17 episodes into the first season. We've only been watching for like a week and a half. We try and catch basically 3 episodes a day. We watch 2 in the morning and then 1 when I get home from work before she goes to bed and I, you know, try and accomplish work. It's been so much fun. I love The West Wing. I've watched it a million times. I can quote episodes, it's a problem. But it's always really good fun to introduce someone to something you love so much and have them, like, fall for it too. The last couple of episodes, she has been really, really excited about. Like, she's had some, she calls them West Wing dreams, in which Josh is, like, hopping around her dream and she's like, what is going on? It's just really fun. And West Wing is a most beloved show of mine. And it's been a really, really good time introducing someone new.
I'm very, very happy for you that you have this experience, because loving something as much as you do and having to, you know, we all know that rewatchable isn't like always so fun because people like don't love it. And there's a lot of sort of Buffy bashing going on sometimes. And it's like legitimately hard for me. Like it legitimately hurts me because Buffy is my favorite thing in the world. So, I mean, I'm very, very, very happy that you have this experience, because I think, was it you who once like tried to make Kyle and Christina watch it and then they just didn't like it?
If anyone out there, if any of our listeners, I'm sure there are zero, listen to the Sorkin series, which when Marima and Kyle and Christina and myself all started at Hypeable, we were all very into Newsroom, and we decided we wanted to do an Aaron Sorkin podcast. In the summer when Newsroom was airing, we were going to do episodes about the Newsroom, but as soon as it ended, Marima and I were really excited to get Kyle and Christina watching West Wing, and we watched about 4 episodes, and they hated it, and Sorkin series ended, and it was done.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was tragic, because Marima and I love West Wing, and Christina recently watched it from start to finish and now loves it, so I just have to get Kyle to you know, discover his love for it. We'll figure it out someday.
we'll figure out a way to do that.
But I will say, Selena, if we ever do Smallville on Rewatchable, I know people will have problems with it and it will destroy me.
Oh, no.
Like,
no.
There will be episodes where people are, like, making fun of it or whatever, and I will be the same way that you are with Buffy. Like, you can't make fun of it. It's amazing. It's you all classic. Just don't understand. Yeah. That will be me. So I do know what you mean.
I would like for those reasons, I wouldn't like to do it, but I would love to do Smallville because I've never seen it, and I'm sure that it's like a show I would enjoy.
Yeah, it's a crazy ride.
Really like it.
I think I would. Yeah, and enjoy the silliness of it too.
It's also really fun because there's so many people that guest starred on Smallville.
Yes,
too. That like later went on to do other things. So I feel like those are like the most fun Easter eggs all the time because like like. Actors pay their dues on like CW, former WB, things like that. So,
but I'm like I was just gonna say, like, speaking of shows that we are rewatching, like, I know you have one too, but I just wanted to say I'm like watching nothing besides Gilmore Girls at the moment. I'm so obsessed. Like I just watch it like in the mornings and when I come home from work and when I'm going to sleep and all the time. And so it was season 5 and the breakup and I'm so upset and like everything's a mess.
Oh, Selena. Give us like a little mini Gilmore Girls hype update. Like, how far are you into season 5?
Okay, well, I think I must be... Oh, when did I last check? I think maybe like half, maybe 12-ish. The big breakup just happened like one episode ago. And they're all like dealing with the fallout of it. I don't want to really give too many spoilers because I don't know who this is. Yeah. I don't want to ruin it. But I am so devastated. Like, and it's so funny because like not to toot my own horn or anything, but my record of predictions on our Gilmore Girls specials hasn't been amazing. But this time, I was like spot on with almost everything. I'm like so impressed with myself. Even though I'm very sad, I will say I liked kind of like how it happened, because I feel like it wasn't really like, oh, we don't love each other, blah, blah, blah. It was like there was a really legitimate reason for it, and I'm very worried to talk Gilmore Girls on the next Hype special because I legitimately do not like Christopher. Like, to me, he is the worst. And that's gonna be hard because Marima loves him, so. Aww. And Logan is there, and that's interesting. I like Logan so far.
Logan is very charming. Like you understand why people are Team Logan, and there are a lot of things about Logan that I love, and there are a lot of things about Logan that I don't like very much. So keep watching.
I will say, I wish I could model all of my grieving after Lorelai. Like, I want to lay in my bed with all of my magazines and foodstuffs. Like, I love that whole thing.
I do too. I was so, like, it was generally, like Gilmore Girls, season 4 and 5 have really hit me, like, not that the other seasons weren't good, but these two seasons have really sort of made me emotionally invested in these characters, and, like, Lorelai's breakdown was just, I was sitting in my kitchen, I was making, like, breakfast, and I was like, oh my god, Lorelai. I was, like, crying. It was horrible. But I love how it evokes such emotion, and I love how complicated it is, and I love how there's, like, no... There's no villain. Like, even though I think what Emily did this time is, like, borderline unforgivable, she's not a villain. You know, she's not a bad person, so...
No, they're all just people thinking that they're doing the right thing, and that's human.
Exactly. So. And some are more, like, selfish than others. Like, I would argue that Christopher is, like, the ultimate selfish. But, you know, he has his issues, too, and he has his history and stuff, so that's fine. And Rory gets to be an like on the top for once, because she's been so low over the past season. So that's nice to see her sort of being the one who things are working out for, at least right now. So it's fun. I'm loving it. And Gil is there, and Lane and Zach, and what the heck? Who saw that coming? Everything is good. I'm sorry. I could talk about this all day.
We'll save it for our next hype special. But there's a little mini Gilmore Girls talk for all of you that just can't wait for our season 5 deep dive. Very quickly, I just want to say that one of the few shows that I never watched and never got into in the late 90s, early 00s is ABC's Felicity. But
I never watched that either.
If you like me have never, I feel like it would piss you off, kind of like the basic premise. But okay. I also feel like you would maybe like her because she's very. Anyway, I'll get to that in a minute. So, Felicity aired. It started airing in 1998, and if you like me have never watched it and have been curious, you should note that ABC, like ABC Go or like the ABC app, it's like all the whole season is free to watch on there. They have all the episodes. So I needed to take a little break from Gilmore Girls, and I started watching this. And if you know me at all, you will know that I get the worst secondhand embarrassment, like, from, like, real people and also from, like, fictional people. And this show just makes me cringe so much that I find myself needing to hit pause and then walk away. But I always come back to it. So I am really enjoying it a lot. It, of course, stars a very young Carrie Russell, Scott Speedman, and Scott Foley. And basically, Selena, since I know you're interested, Felicity is this girl that she's, like, very brainy, very smart. She graduates from high school. She's got this plan. She's going to go to Stanford. She's going to graduate with a degree in medicine, and she's going to be a doctor. And then everything kind of gets turned upside down because she finally talks to this guy that she's had a massive crush on for like ever. And after he signs her yearbook, she's like, that's it. I'm dropping everything. I'm following him to New York, and I'm going to go to college there. And it just makes for a very interesting experience because she's still, like, obviously hung up on him, but she's very much, like, her own person. So this is why I'm saying, like, I'm not sure if you would really like it very much or not, because it's very, like she's clearly there for a guy, but she's also there to, like, discover herself. So it is a good place for her to be in, but I just don't think that she realizes that, like, the path that she's on is a path for her yet, at least from what I've seen. Like, she's right now very much still hung up on this guy.
I get it. When I was 16, I took a math class way below my level just because a guy I liked was in the class. I understand.
You understand.
Yeah. And I think it'll be good. All I know about this show is that, like, she gets a haircut at one point, and also J.J. Abrams, when he envisioned Alias, it was basically Felicity if she was a secret agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's very strong-headed, and actually, it's really funny because Jennifer Garner guest stars on this at one point, so it's funny that she then went on to do that. But yeah, like, you bring up a good point. This is one of J.J. Abrams' earliest shows, so it is, like, worth a watch. It's one of those, like, iconic shows from this time. I think it was just, like, a little, like, the kids were so old because they were in college, and, oh no, I need to stick with my high school Dawson's Creek situation. So I'm watching it now, and it is making for a very interesting experience. And and also after we finish wrapping up this show, I'm gonna go check out Britney Spears' Carpool Karaoke. So
is it out yet?
I'm sure it is. It usually comes up like after it finishes airing on the East Coast.
We should look it up live on the air to see if people are commenting that she lip syncs.
Oh, do you want to do that now?
Yes, just a full hype circle.
All right.
I wish Andrew
was
here.
Why don't you explain that for the listeners that...
Oh, it's not up yet.
Oh, it's not up yet? Oh, that's too bad. Well, Andrew wrote this story up, and you were kind of alluding to it.
Yes.
Basically,
Hypeable's like most retweeted tweet ever is basically all the Britney fans came out in force to hate on us because Andrew wrote in his headline, professional lip syncer Britney Spears is appearing in Carpool Karaoke. And of course, as has been pointed out, there is no lie in that sentence because Britney Spears famously lip syncs all her live performances. So what was sort of interesting and what he pointed out in the article too is that this might potentially be an opportunity for us to hear her sing semi-live. But a new promo that came out a couple of days ago showed her lip-syncing. So now we're all very curious to find out if this is, like, if she's going to basically go with her I don't sing in public bottom line, in which case, what a weird choice to have her on Carpool Karaoke. Or if, you know, she's going to surprise us and belt out something fantastic. Like, we know she can.
Exactly. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yes. But by the time this comes out, you can look it out up yourself.
And exactly. And send in your reactions, which is a good transition into our final segment for the day, which is, of course, your feedback. We love getting to hear what you guys think about what's going down with the show. And just in case you don't know it yet or maybe just forgot, we're going to run through our contact information very quickly in case you want to write in as well and maybe get your thoughts heard on a next a forthcoming episode of this show. For starters, if you have shorter comments, you can always tweet us. We are at Hypeable Hype on Twitter. We are also at Hypeable Hype on Instagram in case you want to connect with us over there. If you have lengthier comments, you can always leave them in the latest show notes on, you know, the latest episode on Hypeable.com. And alternatively, you can also drop us a line via email. Our email address is hype@hypeable.com. And then finally, we do want to remind you that we are over on Tumblr. So if you want to hang out with us over there, our Tumblr address is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. So there are plenty of ways to get in contact with us, and don't be shy. Come in and continue the conversation while we're not on air. We have one comment from hypeable.com, and Kristen, do you want to take that one from Teal?
Sure, yes. Teal Sunset says, "Hi, I'm a classic movie fan, and I wanted to clear up something from this episode. You mentioned that the original A Star is Born was the 1976 version starring Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson. Actually, the first female first feature film of A Star is Born was the 1937 drama starring Janet Gaynor and Frederick March, and the arguably best-known version is the 1954 musical starring Judy Garland and James Mason. They are both excellent films, and I recommend you watch them, yet they are both well over 2 hours long, probably something we can expect from the from the 2017 Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper version." Whew, lots of stars have been born. Is basically
several
what you should all take
are
from
born.
This. Yes.
No, stars are born.
It's crazy, like, to think about all the remakes. We talk about remakes and sequels and all that all the time, yeah. But, like, here's a movie that has been remade 4 times, and... Mm-hmm. Is, you know, now we're up for another and should be fun. So,
yeah.
Definitely check those out if you're interested in, you know, learning all the history behind the movie before the Lady Gaga one comes out.
Cool. So we also have a short comment from George who says, "Netflix is being silly with Gilmore Girls. Wouldn't they gain more subscribers if they did either a monthly or every 3 month release? People who are coming just for the show will probably just use their free month trial and be done with it." That's actually a really good point.
It's a really good point. Yeah. Another reason why this is ridiculous.
It just shocks me that there are people who don't have Netflix. No, I'm teasing. But yeah, no, that's a really good point, honestly.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we also have some of your tweets. Selena, do you want to take the first three?
Yes. So the Lady Ash says, "Saw Hunt for the Wilder People tonight and enjoyed it. Has anyone on the show seen it? I'd love to hear your thoughts." And she's, of course, asking because Taika Waititi is directing that one, and he's also doing Thor Ragnarok. So it's kind of topical. And also because it's a movie that's out in theaters. It's not out in Denmark yet, so I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't either, but I want to because I know that he also did What We Do in the Shadows, which I absolutely love. So I'm eagerly anticipating this for sure. But I know Marima has because she talked about it a couple of episodes ago. So tweet at her if you want to talk about it. Rachel says, FYI, Close Encounters of the Third Kind uses light and sound to communicate with aliens that land on Earth. And I'm assuming that this is in regards to Stranger Things. And she's very, very right. I actually love Close Encounters. It's like one of the original sci-fi alien flicks. So if you've never seen it, I highly recommend you do it because it's definitely one of my favorites. And I'm sure I'm not alone.
Yeah, I think it was because we were talking about Arrival and saying it was a new kind of superhero or alien movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I thought she was talking about Stranger Things with, like, the lights flickering and things like that. But Arrival is as well. You're right. Okay, so we also have a tweet from Phoebe who says, I just finished rewatching Merlin and re-listening to this old episode. It's been too long. Hashtag long live the king. Aww, all the feelings.
Yeah,
all
our Merlin special. Yay.
Yay. Okay, so you have a few more tweets here before we wrap things up. Kristen, do you want to take the next three, please?
Sure. Yeah, Joel Gamache, who is always a frequent commenter for us, and we love her, says, I keep seeing my number of unplayed episodes and thinking, how am I so far behind? And then I realize they're all Gilmore specials. There are a few of them. Yeah, don't worry. You can catch up all at once right before Gilmore Girls, and it will be fabulous. We also got one from Caitlin Michelle, and she says, thanks, Hypeable Hype, for wrecking Illuminae. I just finished it. Such a beautiful and exciting read. All the feels. I have not read this. I know it's on Karen's bookshelf because I see it all the time.
Yes.
So it's one that will definitely have to be read by me in the future. Let's see. We also got one from Mel at Miss Mel 959, and she says, Ragnarok is filming less than a kilometer from my work, and it is probably the biggest distraction ever. I can only imagine.
What? Mel, keep us updated. Tell us what you see. Be our eyes on the inside.
Yeah. All the no spoilers, but no, you know, spoilers.
But, yeah. But yeah, but spoilers.
You can spoil me. That's fine. Send them to me.
All right. We have one more tweet here from Emmy Foss who says, super late Harry Potter fic racks, next generation, delicate and still delicate, which is a Scorpius Rose fanfic. This was from a couple of episodes ago, in case you guys don't remember. We had a listener write in and ask where she should get started for Harry Potter fanfiction if she's never taken a dive into that aspect of fandom. And ever since then, we've been getting some of your fanfic recs, which I always think is really fun. So we're going to run through these really quickly. And we'll put them in the show notes, too. Or you can tweet at Emmy Foss at Emmy Classic if you're interested in talking to her a bit more about fanfiction, because she's got a couple here. So very quickly, she also recommended A Little More Time, in which Teddy saves his parents.
The real plot of Cursed Child.
I know, the real plot of Cursed. Just side note, I was writing a story for my other job, like my day job. And I had squeezed in a mention about a Harry Potter musical into this article because Darren Chris had just gone in. And I was like thinking about it, and they should have just canonized that because it basically starts going into it with the time turner stuff. And anyway, that's neither here nor there. Okay, cute. A couple more fic recs. Two by Caput Draconis. Caput Draconis, I get it now, which is an Albus Scorpius fanfiction, in case some of you are still shipping that hardcore.
When are we not?
That is a good point. Bound with Silver Threads, which is Lily Luna and Cassiopeia Malfoy. Interesting. And then finally, she also sent over some Hogwarts era recommendations. Consumed by Celtic Bard, Normalcy by Not a Dry Eye, and Isolation by Bex Chan. And I think I feel like I've heard of this Bex Chan before. So there you go. Tons of Harry Potter fan fiction out there in case you want to continue the journey. Yeah. So that basically wraps up the show. Sorry, it got a little funky at the end there. I think I need to go to bed. And I think these other ladies are really tired, too. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, now I'm awake, so now I might as well
edit this thing.
I was going to say, you might as well read some Harry Potter fan fiction.
I was going to, yeah, that's true too. I mean, I was going to say, I don't think I've shared my recs on the podcast, and I cannot think of any off the top of my head because, like, it's been many years since I've read any. But I do remember there's a couple that I would actually love to recommend. I had really weird genre preferences. Like, I liked time travel stories, ironically, where they, like, Harry went back and changed something and the whole world was different as a result of it. And I liked, like, adult Ginny-centric fanfics. And there was one in particular which I remember being hysterically funny, and it's probably not if I read it today, but maybe it holds up, so I have to dig that out. I have no idea what it was called. All I remember is there was something about mascara. It's literally all I remember. So, you know what, it'll be hard.
You know what I liked a lot, though? Do you guys remember before Joe clarified it, there was this whole, like, subgenre of theorizing over the fact that the wand order was wrong in regards to Lily and James in Goblet of Fire, the end of Goblet of Fire. And everybody mm-hmm. was like, but what does this mean? Because she killed, you know, this one first, but this one came out. And
oh,
for
yeah.
the longest time, there was so much fan fiction centered around this idea that maybe James was alive because the wand order was wrong. And there's, like, some good stuff out there for that. Like,
oh,
they
cool.
find James later. They figure out a way to bring him back because, like, it all has to do with this. And then, of course, Joe stomped on all of our dreams, but it made for some great fan fiction. And that's the great thing about fandom, is that you can kind of take these tiny little things and run with them. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's start wrapping up the show because we're running a little long here. But we do want to thank you guys so much for listening. And, of course, feel free to reach out throughout the week if you want to chat about anything that you heard us mention on this episode, or if you just want to write in and make sure we talk about something else in a future episode. But until then, thanks so much for joining you guys, and we'll see you guys next week for episode 112. My name is Pamela.
My name is Lena.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Lucky number 111.